listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me, your friendly psychologist, as we do every week about this time, wherever you're listening from, on LA Talk Radio. And I have a great show for you today. And I encourage you all to call in if you'd like, wherever you're at. That number out there is 323-203-0815. Whenever the guy starts to sing, you know, with that kind of sexy, hushed voice, it makes me want to get quieter. Wake up! All right, here we go. 323-203-0815. That's the number to call on if you have any questions or problems or issues or anything like that going on in your life. That's what I do here on the couch. I'm a licensed psychologist, but let me get clear to y'all that we do not have a therapeutic relationship. This show is purely for information. And a little advice, and some entertainment as well, hopefully. So, and again, the number is 323-203-0815. And I have a special in-studio guest today. He is the author of a couple of books, actually. But his name is John Corcoran, and he wanted me to introduce himself as the author, bon vivant, entertainment...
Czar.
Hold on, let me get this out. Czar... Czar. I can't read your writing. Emeritus at KCAL TV.
Emeritus.
I can't even read your writing.
Well, it's what is emeritus.
It? Oh, Czar emeritus. It looks like a B.
Yeah, I know. I have no handwriting.
B-U-R-E-T-E. A lot of people. Czarberitis?
Czarberitis.
Is right. That a, is that
I have
a condition?
I have a bad case of czarberitis. Doctor.
Does that hurt?
I thought you were a medical doctor, and I thought you could help me with my czarberitis.
I'm not. I'm sorry.
Czar emeritus is what I am, which means.
Czar emeritus.
That's,
isn't there
that
you
a
are.
That's a fancy term for no longer works there.
Well, no. I mean, well, what the heck? You know, you move on.
And I am
on.
An author of two books.
You now tell us the names of your books
and
where people can get them. No?
What? No. Well,
oh, okay.
Well, neither. Well, okay. One is called True Grits, and that came out a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Many years ago.
And what's
and
that about?
That's about a certain president.
Okay.
I don't want to date myself, but
all
it's
right.
About Lincoln. No, no. It's about Jimmy Carter. That was
well,
years
cool.
ago.
Okay.
And then there was one that came out the 12th of September. In 2001. Great timing, John. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Which was called A Few Marbles Left. And that was my analysis of the entertainment industry, particularly the media as such, and news and things along those lines. And that sold up into the high dozens.
Yeah.
So the book did very well.
High dozens.
High dozens, yeah.
Well, you know.
They're thinking of making a movie out of it.
That's good. Hey.
Yeah.
Really? That'd be wonderful.
Seriously.
We're taking
meetings. We're having lunch. I don't know. I would like to play myself.
A Few Marbles Left.
A Few Marbles Left.
Does that mean that everything's not quite right with all these people?
I ain't hooked up right, Michelle.
Or
you should know that.
Well, maybe it's the entertainment industry is not hooked up right, and that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Boy, isn't that
today.
The truth. Well, I tell you, I kid about being entertainment czar emeritus, but what that amounted to was 20 or so years of interviewing stars on junkets and things like that.
Right.
So I have great insight into their personalities.
Good.
Such as they are.
Well, maybe you can give me some of this great insight as to your
perceptions. Name a star. I'll tell you what's wrong with them. That's why I'm here.
All right. What's up? Let's just talk about Mackenzie Phillips. Let's start out with that. She's written her book, of course.
My.
Well, you know, isn't that sad? I mean, she's written this book, and she came out, she's been a drug addict a long time.
She's had her problems.
Arrest.
And the old saying, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree,
right.
I think applies. Her, people of an older generation may remember the mamas and the papas, and that
right,
was
right.
Her daddy was...
John Phillips, right?
My microphone, it just fell.
Oh, that's
microphone
not good.
Is protesting my acting. John Phillips, of course.
Yeah.
And he was not only a druggie, but a bit of a sex addict, apparently.
Oh, he was, apparently.
Yeah, he and as was his lovely wife, oddly enough, named Michelle Phillips,
yeah.
who had a little affair with the other papa in the Mamas and the Papas. So there
yeah.
was a lot of that going on.
It's really, really confusing.
And
right?
then Mackenzie, after her dad's dead, and
yeah.
while she happens to have a book out, says
right.
Daddy took advantage of her.
Right.
I don't know if it's true or not.
Well, she said she engaged in a 10-year consensual sexual relationship with her father, and
yeah.
that was, of course, John Phillips at the time.
That ain't right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, you know, that ain't right. But, I mean, why?
Well, I'm not saying it's not correct. I'm saying it's not
no,
right,
No, I hear
obviously.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I get that, totally.
And, but you know, it's
yeah.
She had an odd upbringing. I mean, one of the funny questions that gets asked stars, of course,
right.
is, what would it have been like if you hadn't been raised by, you know, by your parents who were still
right,
well,
exactly.
how do they know? Because they weren't. They were raised as they were.
Right.
So they don't know another difference. Michael Jackson, a classic example of that.
Yeah,
had
exactly.
He really didn't have a chance.
Right. He did not. The
life.
Poor guy did not have a chance, exactly,
no.
because he was the star. And, of course, his, you know, supposedly, according to LaToya, his daddy used to beat him a lot. He used to, you know, profess that he was afraid whenever he heard him walking down the hall. He
yeah.
would go into these panic attacks and things. So that's, and of course, being a superstar and never having a childhood, that's, the guy's screwed.
You've got to
completely.
Say that. You've got to say that's exactly true.
The guy's
and,
messed up.
And it's
so.
Sad. And you know, his later drug habit and use is
right.
probably not shocking.
Right, exactly. So your analysis of this Mackenzie Phillips, and then we'll move on to
okay.
other stories, is that you think this is a lot of hooey, or do you think this really happened with her dad?
I look at it askance. I'm
oh.
not saying it's not true. We can't prove it. But what I'm saying is it's a situation where certainly her father isn't around to deny it.
Yeah.
And perhaps the amount of drugs he used, he'd be unable to deny it because he probably didn't recall. Most
right,
of.
Right.
I read his book when his book came out, The Mamas and Papas, hoping to read about how they created their songs.
Right.
Say what you will about them, wonderful harmonies,
yeah,
great sound.
Right.
I really want to. And most of it was, I did a bunch of drugs and then I wrote Young Girls Are Coming to the Canyon. So he was a druggie. He had
right.
real problems.
He had
so
a big problem.
Certainly it's a problem. They
right.
they get in a certain incestuous, egocentric situation where their life becomes entertainment and
mm-hmm.
show business and
mm-hmm.
getting to the next gig
mm-hmm.
and getting the next drugs, getting
right.
the next fix. And
right.
you know, as the old saying goes, the musicians get all the women. Why he, and this is going to sound cynical,
right.
but why he needed that is beyond me.
Who knows, you know, and who
yeah.
knew the real psyche of him? Now, his Michelle Phillips, her stepmother,
yeah.
said it's BS. It's not true. She just wants to publish a book and get out there again because she hasn't had any acknowledgement for really a long time. So,
well, you never know with these.
You never know.
A lot of these people, a lot of stars are very hip. A lot of them have publicists who are very smart.
Right.
And a lot of them will use what's necessary
right.
to promote or reignite a career. And Lord knows the media jumps right in to help them.
Boy, they really do.
And, you know, the story.
Exactly.
The story yesterday with the balloon boy.
Right, right.
Balloon boy, we're calling him
now. That was amazing. The poor little guy was hiding in the attic.
Hiding
his
in
little
the attic.
Hiding place.
Yeah. Now, did
yeah.
you, I don't know if you, maybe you weren't up early enough to see the Today Show. It turns out they happened to be videotaping the balloon launch.
Gee,
just by coincidence.
Isn't that amazing? But supposedly he got away, and who knew?
Yeah, who
yeah.
knew? And
yeah.
I, you know, and
yeah.
then the dad was, every time they asked him a sentimental question, he was okay, like breaking
right.
up. And again, not to be cynical, although I'm quite good at it.
No, exactly.
It was what the cops call dry crying. There
right.
was no tears coming out of his
no.
eyes when he was cracking up.
It was a publicity stunt.
Well, I would not be shocked at all. The other
yeah.
thing is, if looking at the balloon when it came down
right.
and was broken open, it looks like it was all one unit. There was
right,
just
right.
a gas bag and the thing underneath
right.
it.
Right,
and
right.
if it's helium, how's
yeah.
it, how are you going to breathe helium in that thing?
Right, exactly.
So I don't.
No.
And the basket conveniently wasn't attached, and of course it was enclosed,
right.
so nobody could see inside.
Exactly.
Very cool. And now all the people coming out of the woodwork who knew this guy were saying, well, it's all phony.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we will see. That story will have a pretty long afterlife. In the
you know,
media.
It's really kind of sad as the reporter who got a hold of that story thought, oh boy, I've got a gold mine here.
Oh,
I get to be on the scene. And duh, he's being used, right?
Being
you
used.
Think?
And but, then, of course, the kid,
yeah.
the kid on TV
right,
on the Larry
right.
King show
exactly.
last night says,
that was for the show.
Right.
The next morning, Dad comes on the morning show. Said,
No.
So one of the reporters said, "I'm going to put this video on a show." So
yeah,
that's
exactly
what he meant.
There you go. Okay. Well, anyway, so that's the deal.
We solved that scandal.
That's done. Yeah. We did. But moving on to actors and entertainers, and you and I were talking on the phone a little bit earlier this week about how crazy, because you are a comedian and you've been around a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
You are. I mean, you've done stand up for years, and you know.
Most people said shut up and sit down, but that's a different story.
You said that, you know, comedians are a real special crew because, you know, they need to be funny and they have these really weird egocentricities that are just amazing. And so we were talking about some of the comedians who you've met and some of the odd people who and what your perception of. You know, when I think of a eccentric comedian, the first person that pops to mind for me is Woody Allen. I mean, he's an amazing producer, director, film writer. I mean, I think he's wonderful. But he is narcissistic as well. But he's neurotic. They don't use the word very much anymore, but he describes himself as being neurotic.
I think it comes with the territory with many comedians. There, you know, it's almost like comedians are in two separate categories now. I don't know how old some of your listeners are, but not many people who follow even his film career understand that Woody Allen started out as a stand-up and one of the best ever.
Oh, he was great.
Just one of the funniest people on earth.
Yeah.
And and a lot of these came from his neuroses growing up, et cetera. And he is, and if you listen to the philosophy in some of his movies, he feels that he is an elite.
Yes,
and is entitled to operate under different rules that other normal, quote-unquote, normal people such as sleeping with his stepdaughter, I guess, marrying his stepdaughter.
Yes, who was actually underage.
And the question, you know, people who think they know people or think they know these guys, think they know Woody Allen or David Letterman, don't. I don't. You know, I've interviewed many of these people, but I don't claim to know them. I just know they're different than most people. The neuroses that makes a comedian tick comes from their upbringing in many cases, and a lot of these people are a little bit wackaloon. It's where the craziness and the insanity comes from. Nowadays, more and more, as the comedy clubs expanded in the 70s and 80s, a lot of people sort of took it on as a job,
and
were not crazy, and just were technicians, very good joke craftsmen. And another thing that actors would complain about is if you go down to the local clubs and get up on stage, it's crowded with actors trying to make it into a sitcom, which is a very good route for a lot of people.
It's a great
route. So where are the neurotics going to get work anymore?
So when you
makes them more neurotic.
When you talked about the upbringing, I have a philosophy myself of the psyche or the upbringing of someone who would want to stand up in front of people and continually, night after night, allow themselves to be humiliated or continually try to think they're funny. Who many of them are, but you know, there's got to be downtime and there's got to be, you know, a time to go within and say, why am I doing this? What is sort of the upbringing profile that you see that may be typical of a comedian who has issues?
Well, I think a lot of it is it becomes, and particularly I'm talking about the neurotics, the ones who maybe do it not so much by choice, but because they're good at it, it becomes an addiction. Certainly you're a psychologist, you know this a lot more than I do, but the good feeling you get from killing, as the comedians say, getting up there and just knocking them dead, and that happened a few times with me, not nearly often enough. But the other thing about comedians will tell you is that you're only as good as your last joke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a singer will get up there and they'll hit clinkers maybe and but they'll get through the song at the end as applause.
Right.
Comedians have got to get a laugh every joke. Now, I saw Rodney Dangerfield, may he rest in peace, was considered one of the great stand-ups of all time.
Yeah.
He was adored. A whole generation of young comedians emulate him, so on. I was at a club in New York waiting to go on, and Rodney came in. Well, he was king. Rodney, if you're trying to be a stand-up or you're trying to get on stage, Rodney gets up ahead of everybody.
And you're talking about Dangerfield, of
Dangerfield,
course,
of course, yeah. Did I forget to mention
Take my wife, please.
You betcha.
Yeah, okay.
I tell you. Anyway.
Oh, he's amazing.
I can't do an act without a red tie. Yeah. You got to have the red tie.
He was so funny.
And he said, I'm just going to do 10 minutes. Well, he got up and it was a bad crowd. It was a terrible crowd.
Right.
He wasn't getting laughs.
Right.
Well, he's Rodney Dangerfield. He doesn't need laughs.
Right.
It's a crummy little club at night.
Right.
Yes, he did need laughs.
Right.
He stayed there for 45 minutes until he had him eaten out of the palm of his hand.
Right.
Then he could leave.
Right.
So that is an addiction. You cannot leave after failing like that. So
right.
And that's part of it. Plus, then when it's over, you've got the neuroses.
Right.
And then you're not performing. And then many of the comedians go down to the bar and see if they can find comedian groupies.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I don't know why. We're moving on from Woody Allen now to Letterman. But
no. I think it's great because I mean he's of course in the news right now. This is
he
the
is
biggie.
Ever.
He's in big trouble. That boy. You know. So he's. What happened? Let's see.
We know Dave.
He first revealed that he was, the victim of a $2 million blackmail plot.
Yep.
And shocked fans with his on-air confession. Did you watch the show that night?
I saw both of them, yeah.
Was it awkward, or was it kind of, did he act it out? Like, was he acting really well, or did he really seem sincerely, oh, man, I just have to tell you something? I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, I think he was kind of... this is new territory. He's very, as many people know, he's a very private individual.
Right.
He does not go out in public. He has his close circle of friends,
mm-hmm.
but he is not a public figure in mm-hmm. that sense. Although you see his show, and I'm a big fan of his show. I watch it every night, or mm-hmm. TiVo, mm-hmm. or whatever. You think he's a public? He's not. He's very closed in. The first night it was like he didn't know what to do with it.
Oh, okay.
And he was like. It was sort of, he was trying to be serious, and
right.
the audience didn't get it. The audience kept laughing inappropriately.
Right, thinking, well, they were uncomfortable, but they also maybe thought it was a bit or something, waiting for the punchline.
And
right?
then I think Letterman's comedy chops kicked in. He thought, well, they're laughing, and then all of a sudden it was sort of almost mm-hmm. dismissive. And finally,
mm-hmm. tongue-in-cheek.
He was kind of sincere, kind of tongue-in-cheek.
No.
But then mm-hmm. he realized over the weekend it was possibly reminded to him by his wife that he'd forgotten to apologize to her.
Oh, dear.
So the next time he was on is when he was totally sincere. There
right.
There was no laughter.
Right, right.
And he made the point that he's got a lot of work to do, is his phrase.
Right.
And I think that, this is just sort of examining entrails,
right.
if you will,
right,
but
right.
just watching him. I think the man changed when he got his kid. And,
right, right. Exactly.
Turned into a daddy, and I think little Harry means so much. It's pretty obvious.
Right, right.
He talks about it a lot.
Exactly. He's got a 5-year-old Harry or
got
something.
Got a 5-year-old like Harry, and I think he loves the kid, and
yeah.
I think he's 62 years old.
Yeah.
He's got, you know, he had his mistress and he had a wife and
right.
he had 5 bypass surgeries.
Right.
I think the guy's busy. He was making out with Stephanie Burkett and he had his doctor in the back seat. Just in case.
Exactly.
But,
so, I hear you.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. It's really.
He will not only will he survive, he'll
yeah.
thrive. The ironic thing is Leno
yeah.
is now dying at 10
yeah.
o'clock. He's not getting any ratings.
Oh, that's too bad.
And Letterman is now beating O'Brien
yeah.
at 11:30.
Yeah.
And the irony is, of course, when did Leno get his boost to go past Letterman? Thank you, Hugh Grant, with another sex scandal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hugh Grant,
of course. You know, that was so funny. What a dummy.
Not for him.
Oh, I think it's hysterical. I love those mugshot pictures of
oh,
the
yeah.
hooker he picked up.
Oh,
God, that was scary.
Yeah, that's like, you know, what's the guy swims over the island with a... Wait, can we tell that? No, I don't want to tell that.
No, let's not tell
that. Swims
joke.
Over the island with a sheep and you picked a really ugly one.
Oh,
but,
God. Anyway.
But let me tell anyway. You, I can... Now, here's where I can help you.
Go ahead.
Am I talking too loud?
I think we have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller.
No, let's see if we... Go ahead. What were you going to say? I
don't
want to cut you off
here. A quick story about what happened with Hugh Grant, I think.
Yeah.
Now, Hugh Grant that day was at a movie junket
mm-hmm.
at the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
So movie junkets are where, and I've been on many of them.
Right.
It's where they spend 5 minutes with TV people.
Right.
All day.
Right.
All day. Now, the movie was called 9 Months, and it was pretty good.
Right,
and
right. I remember that.
Generally, TV people are not the sort of things that, you know, you really sucked in this movie.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
Right,
it's generally
right.
basically blowing smoke out.
Exactly.
So he's listening to this all day, thinking he's the most wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure many of the female reporters were smiling and flirting and so on and so forth. So at the end of the day, he's Hugh Grant. Elizabeth Hurley, his sweet love, his girlfriend, who is not there, is nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What? He's got hormones.
Yeah.
So he goes off drinking with his buddies. And he can't really be seen in public picking up a woman or anybody else
right.
because the word will hit the tabloids.
Right, right.
What's he going to do?
Mm-hmm.
He did the stupidest thing he possibly could do. Now, if he had a publicist who was paying attention,
exactly,
they could have solved that problem
right,
ahead of time.
Right.
But I'm not justifying the morality of it. I'm just saying the guy's a dog.
Yeah, he's
a dog.
He's been
praised all day. He's
right.
raring to go. He got
right.
nobody to go with. And
right.
the moron picks up a hooker.
Yeah,
and,
really.
You know,
that's pretty dangerous, you know,
it's
too.
Probably happened once or twice with other people who
right.
weren't caught.
Right.
But I'll bet you the one good thing that came of it was it didn't happen a lot afterwards.
Right, exactly.
Why didn't they just,
why didn't his publicist just hire a really high-class hooker for him and, you know, be real discreet about it, rent a hotel, and
well,
just make it
British,
make
you
it
know,
done.
He probably didn't know how to ask.
Well, oh, that's interesting. That's true, too. They don't know how to do that. No, but he really got himself in trouble, and it seems to have passed, except the fact that we're bringing it up today and, you know, running him through the mud again, which is great.
Has he got another movie coming out?
I don't know.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I think he does have another movie. I don't know quite what it is, but I recently read that, he does have a new film coming
out.
Very
talented guy. That helps.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a comedy thing as well, which he's really good at.
He is excellent.
Anyway, so back to Letterman. Yeah, so he supposedly had a liaison with his longtime assistant, Stephanie
Burkett.
Yep. And then, of course... he says this pre-existed his marriage.
Pre-existing condition, I believe that's
right,
called
exactly.
Medical term.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
He was living with Rebecca, his now wife, for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And running around. Well, the only thing I can say is that he was a dog when she met him.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, good afternoon, wherever you're at. This is Dr. Michelle on the air with John Corcoran, and you're on the couch. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Michelle. How are you?
Good, good. Good to hear from you. By the way, you are listening to LA Talk Radio, and go ahead and
yes,
tell
I
me
am.
What's going on. Yes, you are. What's up?
Yeah. Interesting show. Interesting show.
Thanks.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm fine. How you doing?
Good. Doing great. Love the show. Interesting stuff. I'm listening hearing about how eccentric some entertainment people are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in LA and I've been dating an actress.
Oh, you're in trouble.
And which is an interesting experiment.
Is she somebody you can say on the air? Somebody whose name you can reveal?
No, no, I wouldn't do that.
Right.
I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
We're not seeing each other anymore, but it's interesting. Our relationship was on and off for about 6 to 8 months, and she was very dramatic. Whenever we
That's
went to a party or we went out, she was very dramatic, and she was embarrassing to be with at parties. Hmm. So
embarrassing? In what way?
So a mutual friend, who I've known for many, many years, said that I should really stop dating her, because, she told me that this woman was histrionic.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
yes.
Could you please explain what histrionic is?
Sure. Histrionic is one of the personality disorders. That they say in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And it's classified as a Cluster B personality disorder, and that means that it's dramatic and erratic, okay? So histrionic is truly what they call a personality disorder. Now, I don't know if this woman had all the characteristics, but if I can think about... So you said that she was extremely dramatic at parties a lot, or just when you took her out. It was embarrassing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was very embarrassing. We'd be at a party, and she'd walk in. She'd say, "You know, I'm here," the party seemed to revolve around her all the time, and it was just very, very strange behavior.
Right. Right. Strange behavior. How did she look?
She's very pretty, but she wore a lot of makeup, and she did her hair up, and and she's she's about 30 years old, and but it was just very, very strange. You probably recognize her.
Yeah.
She's been on some shows, and but it was very, very, very bizarre behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for an actress, I don't think.
You've seen a lot of the histrionic types, haven't you, John?
Oh, there's a history of histrionics that I've seen, yeah.
Right, exactly.
But some actresses are fairly normal, I guess. I'm not a psychologist, obviously, and I'm not don't have all that great insight. But you know what? They're human in many cases. Emma Thompson, for example, Academy Award-winning actress.
Right, right.
Interviewed her once, and the publicist said, "Don't talk to her about her marriage breaking up,"
because
she had just broken up with Kenneth Branagh then.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, because if the publicist says that, they're not going to invite you back the next time.
Cool.
So you
got
to be cool.
Right.
So I don't, but I'm looking at her, and she's sort of she's a little off her game. She's a very funny woman. Not many people realize that.
She is.
It's
she's
hilarious.
Awesome.
Started
she's
out
awesome.
In comedy, actually.
Yeah.
Before she became the serious actress.
Yeah.
And she's just a hoot. And she's not a little off her game. Anyway. So I don't ask because I'm a don't ask, don't tell
kind of
guy.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the interview, though, we stand up. I take off my microphone. I just walk over and I said, you know, we were asked not to talk about your breaking up. And that's why I didn't ask you the question. But I want you to know I'm sorry.
Right.
Well, it was like I had taken a thorn out of her paw. She was so appreciative. I said, oh, thank you so much. It's been bloody awful, you know, and just been held
right,
to go
but
through.
That was off mic and off
very,
tape. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wasn't looking to exploit it or anything except now.
Right.
But no, but I mean, it was just, you realize that sometimes they go through real life things too.
Right, exactly. No, they do, exactly. So I'm sorry I didn't catch your name on the air. What is your name?
I'm Jason. My name is Jason.
Hi, Jason. Are you calling because you just kind of want to know the definition of histrionic personality disorder, or just kind of are you trying to work through old stuff with her? Did she hurt you, or did she dump you, or this actress?
Well, we're still. It's not that we're still seeing each other, but is there any way to fix this?
No.
Is there a fix to this problem?
No. Most of the cluster B axis twos are really you don't usually fix them a lot of times because. You know, they're pervasive. It's I'm looking at my because I'm not, you know, completely I know most of the cluster B's here, but it says there's a pervasive pattern of excessive emotionality and attention seeking. All right. It begins by early adulthood. And this person is uncomfortable in situations where she is not the center of attention. Right? Interacts with others and is often characterized by inappropriate, sexually seductive, or provocative behavior. Sound
That's
right?
Her.
Displays rapidly shifting and shallow expressions of emotions. Oh my God, you're wonderful! You know that big, you know, drama thing that I guess that you're describing that went on in parties. Consistently uses physical appearance to draw attention to self. Now, all women try to dress up and stuff, but you said this one went over the board, over the top, overboard.
She would want to have sex at the party, you know, and she wouldn't mind people watching.
And I'm sorry, you broke up with this woman?
It gets a little embarrassing.
So, yeah, she just wanted to have, like, she was a major show person. She just wanted everybody, that's creepy. So
it was a
little bit odd.
Most guys would kind of think that was fun and everything at first, but after a while. Let's see. Let me read some of the other definitions here. Has a style of speech that's excessively impressionistic and lacking in detail. Shows self-dramatization, very theatrical and exaggerated expression of emotion. Also is easily influenced by others or circumstances.
Oh, sure.
And many times considers relationships to be more intimate than they actually are because they're shallow, supposedly, and they can't really get the fact that a lot of people don't want to be with them because it's very uncomfortable. But they, you know, show this outward drama of everything's wonderful, I have so many friends, and, you know, they're really kind of clueless about how they come off to people. And that's what's really sad about this particular personality disorder is there's no, if someone were to tell them, there wouldn't be an acknowledgement. They wouldn't get it. So I don't know if you've said it. Have you said anything to this person, this actress? Have you said anything to her about?
Oh, well, yeah. I've told her that that her behavior is embarrassing and that it was just it's just strange to be with someone who it's like on and off switch.
Yeah.
You know, we're driving to a party or we're driving someplace, and you know, she looks all right. I mean, a little over the top, but but then when we get out, it's like, whoa, you know, she turns it on and it's just, she's all over everyone and, she's jumping around and she drinks she gets more exaggerated and crazy and, very exotic. Kind of poses and there I am just standing off to the side going, oh God, not again.
So you're getting that she's,
so it is it is strange.
Okay, so you're getting that she's totally attention seeking and it's pulling you away a little bit. You're backing off.
even at small parties, dinner parties and things like that, you know, 6-8 people, she always has to be, you know, the center of attention.
Yep, that sounds exactly like the histrionic thing, and it's really tough to deal with.
Isn't there any medication that she can take? Tranquilizers? I don't know.
Tranquilizers are good. Tranquilizers are going to knock somebody down and make them feel very mellow, but, I mean, usually they don't have medication for a lot of times for the cluster B personality disorders. You know, tranquilizers are, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, but just by having clients like this, I know that that's one of the you know, most common medications. Antidepressants are great because there could be a depressive, you know, feature going on, a lack of self-esteem down under or whatever. I don't want to analyze this person, but and I don't even know her. I can't diagnose her really over the radio, so this is not a true representation. But what I'm saying is that, you know, if it's really, you, it sounds to me like you want to fix her and that you'd like to continue a relationship, but I don't know if she's really going to change unless, you know, she starts seeing someone who can really tell her objectively, and she would be willing to listen, that it's rather a put-off to be around her because she's too dramatic and outgoing, and it's scary almost. So,
right.
You know, so you've told her this before? And so you've pulled away from her?
Right.
Okay. And maybe just think about...
She's a convenient friend, you know.
Yeah.
She's...
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those situations.
Yeah.
I'm in the industry, and we see each other occasionally, and
friends
there's always...
Friends with benefits.
Friends with benefits.
All right.
It's kind of crazy, but, you know, it works.
Okay, see it for what it is. Enjoy it. Don't think that there's going to be any deep, wonderful... romantic giving to you, because the histrionic person is about themselves. So if you're looking for a deep, wonderful, giving person, you're not probably going to find it in her. So that, you know, just enjoy it for what it is. Have great sex and enjoy. That's what I say. And kind of, you know, hey, I'm proud of you for admitting to yourself as to why you got into the relationship.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
You know, hey.
Okay. And so
I'm
you
a
know,
guy.
So you know why.
That's why.
So you know why, and you don't have to go deep down and explore why you were attracted to this person. It's just pretty much on the surface, and, you know. So that's not
okay.
Yeah, so in terms of fixing, it's real hard to try to fix people with access to cluster Bs. But just enjoy and be honest. Keep honest. Keep it real. We always try to keep it real with people who have that because, you know, sometimes they don't get it, but it's always nice to keep it real and be very upfront about, you know, I felt kind of uncomfortable when you did this in public and whatever. It's really your choice. So, you know, you know what you want out of the relationship, so.
Yeah, well, I know that I don't really want to be around a person like that on any kind of permanent basis.
All right, All right. So maybe give
her... Well, thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Maybe give her a break and don't use her for sex. Let her move on to somebody else. Because if you're just using her for sex, that's not very nice.
I can't. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
You don't want to do what?
Occasionally, you know, just to keep her around for sex. I mean, that's all great and everything, but that gets tiring after a while.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. All right, Jason. Thank you for calling LA Talk Radio.
Thanks, Dr. Michelle.
All right. Take good care now.
Bye.
Bye. All right. That was cool.
Shocker.
Shocker. Interesting.
Actress acting like that.
Yes, very different.
Unusual.
Different and unusual, isn't it?
I have to say, was it Axis A, Cluster B? Is that what you called it?
It's actually a Cluster B. Axis 2.
Axis 2.
There's 5 axes on a diagnostic system.
Okay.
There's 5. And,
Axis 2, Cluster B.
Axis 2 and the Cluster B are called dramatic and erratic personality disorders.
Without that, there wouldn't be a Hollywood.
No, there wouldn't, because what we're looking at here are the narcissistic personality disorder.
That's an actress and an actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And usually men are more prone to the narcissistic personality disorder, they say, than the women, because the women are more histrionic, which have the same kind of categories.
Well, here's them. What about Sally Field? I mean, good Lord, she's winning. Was it her second Oscar?
Right.
And she's going, you like me, you really like me.
No, I don't think that was narcissistic.
Oh, I'm wondering if it's just the insecurity, though.
I think, probably. And I think it was just, I think
bad
she was just being really honest.
Yeah.
She didn't even think about it. It was just very organic. And I just get that it was, you know, wow, gosh, you really do like. It was very cute, and people kind of, you know, ran her down for that. It was just, I think she was being really honest.
Well, I think she's terrific.
And I don't think she's got a narcissistic thing. I really don't. No. I mean, come on, she's doing Beneva commercials. Give me a break.
There you go.
You know.
There you go.
But no, I like her. I think.
No, I'm
like
a big fan.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Just, I'm just like saying, I'm, you know, no. Sometimes even the most successful seem insecure at times.
I think we're all insecure. And I think,
not me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay,
oh,
never mind.
Lord knows I have reason to be. No, I kid. I am. Of course I am.
No, and we all, you know, we all need certain things. But it just seems to me like you and I were talking about, and the guy who called in, you know, actors, actresses, you know, there's a certain need sometimes for adulation and constant attention. And
boy.
You know, so what I'm getting is that there are other people, and not to discredit the other actors and creative people, writers, producers, people behind the scene seem to be a little more mellow.
They're really
cool behind the camera. They're really cool directing, and you know they love to do that. But and I think there are a lot of comedians who are great, healthy, intelligent, wonderful people.
Exactly.
And actors and actresses as well. But I think, you know, sometimes there's a tendency to kind of feed this ego need and get kudos and feel better about yourself. But it just seems like sometimes there's not enough.
You know, there was
There's not enough. They just have to keep feeding.
Yeah, you're right. And the funny thing is, I think also what's really being insecure as comedians are particularly as insecure as your last joke. Mm-hmm. Even a fellow like, and again, this is going back a ways, but he is kind of an immortal, Mort Saul, political humorist for years.
He's
still alive and he's still doing stand-up occasionally. He's in his 80s. But he once, and I interviewed him once, and he was supporting General Alexander Haig for president. Now, Alexander Haig's a far-right winger, and Mort Saul considered libertarian-ish, but still very, very liberal.
Right, indeed.
In philosophy. And he once, you know, well, it's a quick story. He interviewed Haig, and Haig was smoking a Cuban cigar, and Mort got mad at him and says, you're an anti-communist, you're anti-Castro, you're smoking a Cuban cigar, which is illegal. What are you doing? He says, well, I like to think of it as I'm burning his crops to the ground. And that may have been part
really
of the reason.
That's really strange.
But the answer is, but why does Mort Saul associate with someone like Alexander Haig rather than the, you know, some of the young radicals who are closer? The answer is because he's within the velvet rope, too. He's a celebrity. It's the brotherhood of celebrity.
Right.
And if you're inside the velvet rope, you have more in common with the people who are also inside the velvet rope than people of common philosophy who are outside it.
Right,
and that you find a lot.
Did you ever interview or meet Robin Williams?
Well, you don't really interview Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Although he is a smart guy. Being interested in comedy, I've interviewed him many times. And being interested in comedy, sometimes I'll get off on a tangent and talking about comedy with him. And he can be very serious, very intelligent, very analytical. And there's about a minute and a half left, and I haven't gotten a good Robin Williams quote yet or a bite.
Exactly.
He knows that, and I don't even have to ask him a question. He will then go babbling on and just going into a stream of consciousness. So he's very generous, very, you know, here's a guy who's gone through a lot of things, gone through drug, gone through divorce, has gone through a heart attack, gone through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of straightened him out. I think he's a pretty cool dude.
I think
cool
he is.
Dude,
he's an amazing, he's brilliant too. He's an amazing guy. But he does have the art of defocusing when people get and start asking questions that are real and real feelings. And, you know, it's very awkward for him. You can see his body language when he's being interviewed. I think he's softened up a lot more now, but when he's being interviewed, in some of the earlier clips, you see his body language when people are really nailing him and keep interviewing him about feelings and life and things. When he can't make a joke or go off and he starts moving, his head starts moving, his body starts waving back and forth, and he gets really uncomfortable because he's not being allowed to defocus sometimes on things. And it's fascinating watching him being interviewed.
I think sometimes comedians don't like to focus on their inner life and they don't want to analyze their own insanity.
Right.
Ooh, that was deep.
That
and
is
I'm not
really
even a
psychologist. Deep.
That was deep.
That
I like
is
that.
Really deep.
Can I write that
Who
down?
Who wants to analyze our own insanity?
I don't
analyze write that down.
Your own insanity.
No, it's really true though.
Own insanity.
Who wants to? You know, I mean, I think it's very difficult to take a look at ourselves and say, why are we doing this or what is my motivation when we, you know, continue to get good things and good feelings, like you said, out of being a stand-up comedian. It's almost like an addiction. They have all these, of course, new studies out about neurohormones in the brain that are produced when we're getting, you know, kudos and people are acknowledging us. And
you mean people like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do.
You know, and it's a high. It's a chemical high. I mean, you want to break it down to science. You know, we get chemically high off that, wow, that rush.
Well, even I know, when I was in Boston and on television there for a while, I was on the 11:30 news, and my wife and family would worry about me driving home late at night.
Right.
And I said, you are never to worry. I said, I have so much adrenaline in my system just from being on the air for 5 minutes that, and it's true. And I would get home. That's when I turned on Letterman.
You'd stay up all night.
No, it would drain out of my system at about 45 minutes after I got home, and then I could barely get up the stairs. That's how it worked. But
it is.
And comedians, and that's why I had it when a guitarist, a great guitarist that nobody's ever heard of named Danny Gatton, killed himself. A fella called me who was a guitarist, and he said he knew him.
Right.
And he knew him very well. And he didn't want to go on the air. He didn't want to be interviewed or anything like that. But he just explained what it's like the other 23 hours of the day when you're not on stage performing and how difficult it is for somebody in the entertainment business who are not performing. It's like what they say about Letterman.
Right.
He lives for that hour a day. That's what his life is focused on. He spends 15 hours a day at work, 14 of it working at work, and the other hour, God knows what. But so I think, you know, it really is a focus of their lives, and they're unable to operate outside of it.
Right, operating outside of it.
That was pretty deep too.
That was very deep. You're
just
good, man.
Nearing you. I'm getting full of insights.
You should write a book.
I think I might.
This is Dr. Michelle, and you're on the couch with me, and you're listening to LA Talk Radio. My guest today is author and entertainment reporter John Corcoran. And
bon vivant. Don't forget the bon vivant.
Bon vivant, darling. And but you're still working. You got some good books in progress.
I got a book in progress that's gonna it's gonna put Hollywood on its ear.
Good.
There's nothing to do with Hollywood.
That's right. That was a little hint.
Yeah.
I know about that book you're writing, but we'll talk about it in just a bit. But no, anyway, getting back to all of your interviews, and do you think that comedians have been the most eccentric of the people that you've met in your years of being an entertainment reporter, or is there a certain type of?
Well, there are certain stars that are, most stars are pretty smart, and most stars are pretty well trained, and there's some great publicists. And, you know, nobody talks about the publicists and they stand behind, but if you ever watch people coming down the red carpet, look behind them, you'll see a person who looks like a normal person. That's usually the publicist. And they're taking good care of them. Well, Tom Cruise, before he couch jumped, fired his publicist and hired his sister, who was a fellow Scientologist. Well, his publicist I know, or knew, or worked occasionally with, or was yelled at by, would not have let that happen, and would have taken care of him. So that was a mistake on his part. But so as a result, most of them are pretty well prepared. And then there are certain stars who just don't get it or don't care. Certain people whose initials are Tommy Lee Jones are almost universally despised by media.
He's such an amazing actor, and I love
great
all
actor.
Of his films.
I never gave him a bad review in my life.
I love all of his
love his films.
Yeah. He's what's
nasty
wrong?
Man.
Nasty.
Nasty man.
Just grumpy as hell, or what?
He's not nice to media.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
No.
I don't know why. There's insecurities of him. And once I put him on the air with being nasty.
Live?
It was on tape. And the publicist said, I'm trying. Good luck. I hope he gets rid of his demons, or the ones that don't make him a great actor. But I would guess, and the most normal people I've found, and probably a lot of people would disagree with this, are directors who are, you cannot ask them a question they have not thought of. A lot of them are ADD, and they say it comes with the territory. Some people have theorized that they're...
How can you be a director and have ADD?
It's almost a requirement. They have. It's like being nibbled to death by ducks. They have 500 decisions to make a day, and they can't take
focus
any time.
Focus down to just several ones.
Exactly. And they got to go on one, and then another, and another. And then there are others, I'm sure, but boy, you talk to them, Richard Attenborough, one of the brightest men I've ever talked to, and just wished I could talk to him for hours. A lot of these guys are great.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are humorists and there are comedians and there are comedy actors. Like Ted Danson and Whoopi Goldberg, for example, were having an affair. It was okay. They were both unmarried at the time. And they had a movie coming out that they were in together. And
that happens
they had
frequently.
A junket. They had a junket. And people said, you can't ask them about it. not right. Gonna, well, everybody's going to ask
him
about it.
Of course, everybody knows
you
about it.
Got to. So, it was everybody right, was talking exactly. about it. So people were asking about it, and I said, how's it going with people asking about it? And they said, well, they've got signs. I said, what? I said, they've got little signs, and they'll hold up a sign. If you ask them the question, they won't say anything. And one sign says, next question, and one says, we're not answering that.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, oh, my God. This is why you should be nice to the little people, quote, unquote.
Right.
I pulled out my notebook, got a Sharpie, wrote something, put it in my pocket, asked them the question at the end of the interview. They held up their signs. I reached my pocket, and I held up my sign, which said, I know, but I had to ask. Well, not only did they roar,
right,
and I
exactly.
had a great clip for the interview,
perfect.
But Ted says, did you get that on the camera? Was that good? You got because
right,
we can
right.
reshoot that if you need
right,
to be.
Right.
So if you diffuse it, maybe the media will be a little nicer to you.
Right,
and the smart ones know that, and they treat you not like an equal. You'll never be their equal, but certainly as somebody who is essential to their careers.
Right, exactly. That's fascinating. I love the interesting thing you said about directors. I recently had a chance to listen, you know, Spike Jonze.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Recently had a chance to listen to him. I'm on the SAG nominating committee this year, which is really bizarre to me because it just happens
Whoa.
Randomly in the
Whoa.
Computer sometimes, so I get to go to all these fun premieres.
That's great.
So I went to see the premiere of Where the Wild Things Are,
a
new animation. It's
yeah.
not really animation primarily. They use a lot of the Muppet crew, you
yeah.
know, and they're amazing mechanical beasts that these actors get in and out of. And it's a great movie for kids. It's wonderful. The
it's
book
out
was,
pretty soon, I think. Another.
It's out this weekend, today.
Today, good.
And I'm not promoting that, but I was just, you know, listening to him talk about they had most everyone who worked on the film, including the set designers and the costume artists and everything. And it was very difficult when you're working with people in costumes and, you know, you have blue screen, you know, with actors. But anyway, green screen, many of them use green. We used to use blue, didn't we?
Back in the day,
yeah. On the Financial News Network set where we met over 20 years ago. But anyway.
Doing financial news.
Yes, right. But anyway, he was talking about all of the details that he had to put together, and it was amazing how this man's mind worked in terms of his organizational skills. I mean, everybody was blown away, all the things that he considered. But I think the key, and I'm going off subject here, what I learned is hiring people who you trust around you to help you do the job, to designate, and that's the key, is to designate people who you trust and let them just go for it.
A lot of regular directors work with the same people, pretty much the same people. The successful Woody Allen, for that matter, works with the same producers all the time.
Yeah. Does he really?
And same, many times the same costume designers, the same casting people, same thing. And
it
gives you a comfort level that can allow you to focus on the job you're working on.
Yeah, yeah. So who do you think is one of the best, let's go into a positive note, well-rounded maybe actors who you have met or who you've seen? You know, we talked about all the people who have these issues and, you know.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with upbringing. And I think if you have a relatively normal childhood, you've got a pretty good shot. As a result, one of the most normal people and one of the most gifted people in Hollywood is Ron Howard.
Yes.
He was not raised as a Hollywood child.
Mm-hmm.
He was raised, even though he was an actor, obviously.
Yeah, you don't think Opie messed him up?
Nope.
Because of the times?
No, he's normal.
Maybe. Yeah.
And his father was a military man, and it took the same thing with Sandra Bullock, who is, you know, is very gifted and just one of the sweetest people you'd want to meet, or was back when I last interviewed.
Yeah.
And she was, I asked her a question after While You Were Sleeping came out, which was a breakthrough movie. I said, when you're a star a year from now, are you going to be the same wonderful person you are now, are you going to be the B word?
Yeah.
Say, oh, no, my parents wouldn't let me do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're well raised. I think it has a lot to do with it. So sometimes, you know, but it's not a business for normal people. I mean, again,
no, it's really
stars
not.
Are different from you and me, and they do make sacrifices and they expect compensations for their sacrifice. Whether or not that's right or wrong, who knows?
Right. And
but it's not as easy as people think it is.
No, hell no. They make it look easy, and, you know, they have the talent, most of them. But I also think you're right. I think it's the early environment that they're brought up in and how, you know, whatever is going on, the abuse or the negligence or the parents, you know, having egos and needing to live through their children
pushing
a lot of times.
Pushing their children into it sometimes.
Which is really sad as well. And then they don't even get a childhood like Michael Jackson because they have to be these adults. Truly, they can be children on sets, but then they have to grow up to be adults.
I know. It's very difficult.
You know, 11, 12, you know, the most important pubescent years. You know, so it's
and then many cases, just when they get their ego being fed, then they're cut off because they're going to wait until they're 18 years old. They're hiring actors who are 18 years old to play a 12-year-old because that way they don't have the restrictions such as teachers on the set and things like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And if your child isn't prepared for that, I had a friend of mine whose kid was an actor, and he got out of the business at that point because they knew. They were smart. They got him out of the business.
Exactly.
Then when he got 18, he got back into it a little
bit. Exactly.
So they were smart. These were good parents.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, exactly. You know what? It's about time we have to wrap up.
My goodness,
it's about that time.
It flew past.
It flew. Thank you so much for being here on my show this again.
It's a great show. I listen to it, and I'm good to be on here.
Do you like to be on the couch? You can stay on the couch if you'd like.
It's a comfortable couch. Nice pillows.
Good. Keep your feet up and your shoes off. It's cool.
Oh, okay.
My guest today on The Couch with Dr. Michelle has been John Corcoran, author, Bon Vivant.
Bon Vivant.
Do I say that well?
Yeah, beautifully.
Entertainment Czar Emeritus at KCAL TV. And many other. He's the author of the book called A Few Marbles Left, which is really truly about his junkets and interviewing all the stars and people in Hollywood and how you actually do have a lot of marbles left. You've done really well.
Mostly cracked ones, but they're there.
Thanks for being my guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Everybody, you have a great day. And, you know, keep it here for more great, stimulating, exciting, provocative talk radio. And I'll be back next week with more of the same. It's Dr. Michelle, and I always say, do take care of yourself first. You know what that means, okay? Not an ego thing, guys. Bye.